This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Joyce and Sharitz here with you on the morning run. It's now time for the business headlines. But before that, just a reminder that right after the 8 a.m. news bulletin, we have the breakfast grill. And today, Sharitz catches up with Kirk Chiang Tung, the executive director of Hup Seng Industries. So, Sharitz, what will you be discussing about?
Yeah, so as you know, Hup Seng is a staple cream cracker for many Malaysian households. But how is this food manufacturing company maneuvering the changing tastes and trends in consumption? So we asked that. So Chiang Tung also, she's sharing her thoughts on Hup Seng's position with regards to branding and its products and how they plan their expansion and also manage how they manage their shareholders. But many are unaware that Hup Seng is vastly undervalued compared to their peers in the sector. So yeah, that's coming up.
Interesting. Well, that's coming up in about 15 minutes. Now let's turn our attention to some of the business headlines. Today, I think one of the big stories coming out is this news that the U.S. and China, they are committing to reach a trade deal by March 1st. So according to the U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on Wednesday, he said that both the U.S. and China are making a big commitment to reach an agreement in their trade negotiations by the March 1st deadline.
Yes, to recap, Chinese President Xi Jinping and his U.S. counterpart Donald Trump, they agreed to a 90-day truce in the ongoing trade war. But if no deal is reached, U.S. tariff on the $200 billion in Chinese import will increase dramatically to 25%. Beijing has also imposed steep punitive tariff on about $360 in two-way trade.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you have Steven Mnuchin saying, telling CNBC that U.S. and Chinese officials are working around the clock, but there remains a lot to be done. And he also stressed that, you know, any agreement must be enforceable. And I think Mnuchin is due to travel to Beijing next week for a third round of talks aimed at resolving tensions. So it's interesting. It looks like they are trying to work towards a resolution. Now, you just came out from a call with Vasu Menon from OCBC, and he says that, you know, markets are pricing in a potential truce. Yeah, a partial agreement, and they're expecting a positive outcome from this. Hopefully, all goes well, unless Donald Trump tweets something different from that.
Yep. Well, in other news, Trump has indicated his preference for now vacant World Bank presidency.
Oh, he did.
So that's something that he's added in. So he stated that it should be led by a U.S. Treasury official, David Malpass, who is known as a Trump loyalist and also critic of multilateral institution, who has vowed to pursue pro-growth reform at the World Bank.
Well, the Washington Post on Tuesday reported that Malpass had accepted Trump's offer to lead the bank. And he would be succeeding Jim Yong Kim, who had announced in January that he is stepping down 3 years before his term was set to expire. And this was amidst differences with the Trump administration over climate change and development resources.
Yeah, and Malpass is currently the Undersecretary for International Affairs at the Treasury Department. A source close to Malpass has said that his priorities would be raising incomes in developing nations and defending U.S. interests as World Bank president.
Yeah, so he has also been a sharp critic of the World Bank, especially over its lending to China, because over the past 2 years, Malpass had pushed for the World Bank to halt lending to China, which he says is too wealthy for such aid. And also when Beijing has subjected developing countries like Sri Lanka and Pakistan to debt loads with its Belt and Road Infrastructure Development Program. So it looks like this new guy, Malpass, is not really a big fan of China.
Yeah, and I think taking a position in World Bank is trying to have more influence, especially in the intergovernmental level. And as you say, this is key, especially US with their policy of more nationalist policy. I guess they would want someone being at the level of World Bank.
Yeah, well, looking at trade, let's turn our attentions to earnings in the US, because a number of big earnings have come out from there. So you have GM's fourth quarter earnings, which was released on Wednesday, that had beat Wall Street expectations due to tighter cost controls and higher truck sales. And here's how the company did compared to what Wall Street expected. So adjusted earnings was $1.43 per share versus $1.22 per share estimated. I think with regards to revenue, they hit about $38 billion versus the expected $36 billion.
Right, and then moving on to another brand, Chipotle, on Wednesday had reported quarterly earnings and revenue that beat analysts' expectation, increasing foot traffic and menu price increases. Mm. Now, yeah, the share of the company jumped to 8% based on a survey of analysts by Refinitiv. Here is what the company reported. So earnings per share is $1.72 adjusted versus a $1.37, and then revenue is $1.23 billion versus the $1.2 billion. Which was expected.
Well, it looks like a lot of good earnings coming out from the US. Also, Disney reported earnings per share and revenue that topped analysts' estimates as well. This was helped by sales increases in its media networks and the theme park business, of course. And the company said that its sports streaming service, ESPN Plus, now has about 2 million paid subscribers. So the earnings looks like it's $1.84 per share that topped the expected $1.55 per share.
Moving on to Amazon, on the other hand, they fell into bear market territory on Friday and dropped below $800 billion in market value. The stock had previously entered bear market territory in December. At one point last year, the stock hit $1 trillion in market value during intraday trading. The shares fell 5.4% on Friday after the company announced on a call with investors on Thursday. Now, this would likely increase investment in 2019 after scaling back capital expenditures and hiring a year prior. And this raised concern about the new regulation in India.
Yeah, it looks like not everyone's reporting good numbers. Also remember Apple, they've suffered a steep loss in market value in early January after warning investors to expect weak revenue for its first quarter 2019. But you know, despite all that, Sharitz, despite reporting lower earnings and all that, Apple has recently just reclaimed the title of the most valuable public company in the world. Right. They surpassed Microsoft and Amazon on Wednesday with a market capitalization of almost $822 billion.
Yeah, Apple, they suffered a steep loss in market value early January.
Yes, they did. And remember, they gave this warning to investors. And following that, I think Amazon and Microsoft also, when they reported earnings, also under-delivered compared to analysts' expectation. Speaking about Apple, I think a notable aspect of their earnings report is the slowdown in iPhone sales, which has raised doubts about Apple's growth prospects. I guess, I don't know, maybe they should re-look into their whole price point issue, right? Maybe outpricing themselves.
But they're also looking at, investing in services.
And their wearables and all that, looking at new forms of income. Well, also, I think there was also newsflow coming up from Apple because they announced that their top retail executive, Angela Adrens, is stepping down, and she's going to remain with Apple until April. I think she joined them about 5 years ago from retail. She was from Burberry.
That's
quite
right.
High level kind of position, moving into Apple as well. But I think there was no reason, official reason given for her departure, for Angela's departure. But I think citing that she was leaving for new personal and professional opportunities.
Yeah. And so she will be replaced by Deirdre O'Brien, a long-term Apple executive who runs the company human resource department. And Angela Adrent joined Apple back in 2014, stepping down from her leadership, as you mentioned just now, from
Burberry.
In Burberry, that's right. So to lure her to Apple, what happened was Apple gave Adrent a company stock value up to $70 million.
Wow, $70 million US dollars just to lure her to join Apple.
That's right. So during her time at Apple, Adrian has also overseen a revamp on the Apple store, bringing trees into the store, attempting to turn them into town squares. And she also engineered renovations of high-profile store in San Francisco, New York, Chicago, and other cities and in an attempt to transform them into hip places to hang out while shoppers check out the company's latest innovations. So she's I think she brought her fashion touch into the Apple.
She's always been in retail, and I think she also oversaw a revamp of the Apple store, bringing trees into the stores and attempting to turn them into town squares. So what's next for her? I think some people are saying that she may return into fashion, but yeah, definitely all eyes will be on where she's going next and what's going to happen to Apple, because I guess they're at a crossroad right now when it comes to Apple and whether or not they'll have to re-strategize. Well, there's news coming out that Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir announced that the government will form a central body aimed at making decisions on issues involving the economy. So he said that the body would have similar functions as the National Economic Action Council, which was formed on January 7th, 1998. And the council was then tasked with identifying the basic economic problems and appropriate policies to respond to them. So I think this new action council, however, will have a different name, will look into all economic matters as well as make decisions on them as fast as possible.
Yeah, interestingly, with regards to this council, no name has yet to be named. Who's going to be part of it? Is it going to be... So those details are still not available. This decision so far has been met with positive responses and deemed as step in the right direction. General responses from experts are that the council should focus on addressing the slowing down of economic activities despite the uncertainties, the rising cost of living, and also high cost of doing business.
Yeah, I guess a big... it's a tough balancing act, Charis, when it comes to this, you know, because you have to please a lot of people, and at the same time, it's not just managing what is in the local environment, it's also globally as well. The whole global macro environment is quite volatile, so it's tough. It'll be interesting to see who's going to be part of this council. Who picks the council? Is it going to be, I guess, corporates, a mix of corporates, the government, industry experts, or maybe even NGOs? I mean, people who can weigh in, economists. It'll be a good mix, but boils down to who picks them. Is it based on merit and whether they can deliver, or is it based on who knows who?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And also, it's a good step forward in the sense that, you know, there's been so much focus in looking back all this while, finger pointing as to what has happened in the past is resulting us to where we are today. So, you know, it's while that is ongoing, I mean, we all know what MECC is doing. They're all doing their job, but it's also good to just have a more forward-looking plan, for example. So, you know, again, as you mentioned, who's going to be part of it and everything, that's going to be key.
Well, speaking about this, blaming the past, I think Lee Heng-Gui, executive director at Social Economic Research Center, said that in general, people are not feeling very optimistic. He said that, you know, it is counterproductive to keep blaming the past. And according to him, Sharad, he says businesses are experiencing declining demand and the government needs to look at how to increase their competency while reducing cost of doing business. So maybe, does that mean in a council you need business owners as well? People who actually know how to run the business and, you know, comes to actually knowing what's happening on the ground, or not just armchair critics.
Yeah. And again, this is about it's about consumer sentiment. Yeah. I mean, people are not feeling very optimistic. There's a lot of things going on. And again, as you mentioned, perhaps there's a lot of business communities out there, a lot of organized association. I mean, they would have perhaps on the ground a feel of as to, you know, and as to what is happening, and their input could be valuable.
Yeah. Sometimes thinking that, you know, and actually knowing to do things is too entirely different things. Well, Dr. Ye Kim Ling, professor at Sunway University Business School, said that the immediate issue the council has to look into is the slowing economy caused by weakening external demand. And he cautioned that if the domestic economy is dragged down by further slowdown in domestic consumption and investments, businesses and households could face more severe economic shocks, such as income losses, wage cuts and retrenchments.
Yeah, and he also said that if cyclical or temporary in nature, the council would need to come up with a short-term economic stimulus measure, like selective government spending boosts and stimulus package to support private consumption and investment. Dr. Yeh, he also added that council would need to restructure the economy in order to raise competitiveness, value-adding technological capabilities and industrial revolution 4.0 readiness. So that means it's all about Malaysians needing to really up their game and also businesses introducing technological capabilities, as much as this ideal, but at the same time, there's a lot of things to balance. For example, the cost of investment, all these things, and change of mindset and so forth.
Mm. Yeah, it looks like there are a lot of things this council needs to do. So the Edge Financial Lady spoke to a number of people to ask them their views on this council. And Alan Tan, chief economist at Affing Hwang Investment Bank, said that apart from driving productivity and moving the manufacturing sector up the value chain, the council should look into ways to, you know, ensure quality FDIs come in, diversify and strengthen the export market, as well as have sustainable fiscal consolidation. So he says, you know, these measures will increase Malaysia's competitiveness while raising household disposable income steadily. That's why it's so important to make sure that we have the right people in the council. And it's going to be difficult for them to figure out. I mean, all eyes will definitely be in who will be a part of this council.
Yep, that's true. Lawrence Todd, Director of Research from the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, said that the new council will have to achieve a greater level of coherence among different ministries. Now, he said that this coherence need to be communicated more clearly, including to the business community at home and abroad, who have been getting mixed signal. Now, this is coming, I think, if you recall, that
The CRL
announcement between the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Economy Affairs. I mean, and I think rightfully said that there are no coherence in that sense. And I think it's giving mixed signals abroad.
Yeah, I think the messaging needs to be, all of them need to be on the same page and, you know, perhaps have the discussion behind closed doors. And then only when you come into the public, have one message for everybody. They should definitely look into PR and communication strategy more closely. Well, the National Chamber of Commerce and Industry of Malaysia has shown support for this council. I think President Tan Sri Ter Leong Yap said it's timely. It's a timely move given the current global challenges. They are looking forward to the blueprint. I think we're all looking forward to also see who's in the council.
Yeah.
There are a number of them who said that, you know, to ensure that every decision made, you know, it should be fair.
Yes. And also looking into the human aspect of things, social activist Tan Sri Lee Liam Tai said that the council must have clear agenda for the country's economic direction. Apart from expanding the social safety net programs to cover more Malaysians, assistance should be given to both low-income B40 and also the middle-income M40 group, as they were most affected by the economic slowdown.
Yeah, so a question here is also, you know, aside from who's going to be in a council, do we have too many councils? Remember, we had the Council of Eminent Persons, and that's no longer around. But why did you stop that, right? And we also have a couple of other groups and all that, you know, I guess focus groups and task groups to spearhead some initiatives. It'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the terms of reference of this council group, for example. Then what exactly is their mandate? Again, because we have the Ministry of Economy Affairs and we have Ministry of Finance. They are policy level. Mm-hmm. They are policy level making, bodies. And you have a council. What is their role? Is their role to just give a recommendation? Mm. And, you know, so that means, are you reducing the role of the ministry? I mean, there's a lot of
questions, definitely. But I think one thing everybody can agree on is that we need to definitely look into our current position when it comes to the economy and also, you know, come up with strategies on how are we going to maneuver Malaysia through these volatile times. It's not just locally, but globally as well. So, well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 01-8789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do we need another council? We're heading into the 8 a.m. news, and after that, Breakfast Grill. Sharad's going to talk to Kirk Chiang Tun, the Executive Director of Hap Seng Industries. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.